This is Sportsnet Today with Logan Gordon on your official home of the Flames, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
First time in this 2022-2023 season, the Flames lose a hockey game. The Sabres sweep the province of Alberta. Tonight, they'll leave Calgary with a 6-3 win.
All right, so it wasn't perfect. It wasn't ever going to be 82-0. The Flames suffer their first loss of the season at the hands of the Buffalo Sabres, 6-3. The final score. This is Sportsnet Today here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan, Logan Gordon, along with you, coming at you live from our downtown studios in chilly Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Lots to talk to Peter Labardius about. We'll have him on in just moments to break down what happened last night at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome, what's going on at Flames practice today, and a quick look ahead at the next opponent for the Calgary Flames. That, of course, the Carolina Hurricanes. They were also in action last night. They fell to the Edmonton Oilers. We'll also have a live Stamps report with our Stampeders insider, Matt Rose, coming up just after 2:30 this afternoon. Stampeders on the plane this afternoon, off to Regina, getting set for their matchup against the Rough Riders tomorrow. That'll end off the CFL week with a 5 p.m. kickoff from Mosaic Stadium. But let's dive into the topic of the day, or the Calgary Flames, going down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline and welcoming in our Flames insider for the Gemini Group. The Gemini Group Home Renovations knows that your home renovation should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. Gemini Group now offering Air Miles, Reward Miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca. Good afternoon, Lou. How are you, pal?
I am good.
Good to hear. We were both at the Saddle Dome last night for that Sabres and Flames game. Flames suffering their first loss of the season against Buffalo last night. I guess just some thoughts from you on the 6-3 loss for Daryl Sutter's crew last night.
Well, I tip my cap to the Buffalo Sabres, who are a young and exciting team with some, you know, terrific talent, especially on the back end. With, I thought Rasmus Dahlin just looks all the player that many had hoped he would be when he was the number one overall pick in 2018. He has now scored in four straight games and was very confident with the puck in all three zones, whether it was starting the breakout in his own zone. I thought their puck movement and Logan last night was perfect evidence of the fastest thing in the game is the puck. And when you move it well and you're very connected, they were impressive. On the other side of the coin, Calgary gets out to an okay start on the goal by Mangiapane, but it was almost like with that goal there might have been just a little, well, we're going to have a good night. And, you know, Buffalo responded and probably had a chance to really turn the lights out on Calgary in the second period. They didn't do that. Calgary gets a break, a bounce off the referee's skate. Trevor Lewis scores. They get a Zadorov goal early in the third. And then, unfortunately for Nikita, took a penalty. Buffalo scored, and that was all she wrote. So it was not the Flames' best night by any stretch. It comes early in the season, which is fine. Anybody that was, you know, thinking about planning any form of parade route, we are in week number two of the season. So it was back to work today, and it will be no easy challenge tomorrow when they face one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference in Carolina.
A couple interesting notes from last night, and a lot of them came in your post-game coaches media availability with Cale McLean, who joined you guys in the Hot Stove Lounge for the Flamestock post-game show. And a lot of talk about the transition defense for the Calgary Flames. You asked Cale about that, and I thought he had a very interesting answer, and it was kind of a good way to sum up what we saw last night for the Calgary Flames in some areas they need to work on. Here's assistant coach Cale McLean in the Hot Stove Lounge with Derek Peter and Pat last night.
Yeah, they did a good job of pushing immediately, you know, stretching out and pushing us back. And but at the same time, their what makes that possible for them was their ability to evade our checking in their end with their defensemen. Give them credit that they were able to sort of buy time to allow that stretch to happen. And then that stretch turned into sort of a return to puck. And we weren't great on both ends. We didn't kill the play in their end. We allowed their D to make plays, and then we didn't kill the play on the stretch plays. We weren't tight with our gaps there, and so it was it was a disappointing night in that respect.
Well, that pretty much said it all. Buffalo, there was many times in that game last night, Logan, where you know they would get the puck, move it very quickly, and four or all five guys would touch it. By the time they ended up with a pretty good shot, they were able to get through the middle of the ice far too easy. The Flames, I always feel, are at their best when, you know, they're a really connected team. They create a lot of what they do well by, you know, putting pucks in good places and pressuring the defense and, you know, then being very connected in their offensive and neutral zone forecheck and turning people over and that resulting in chances. And, you know, I further went to ask Kale as well later in that conversation about, you know, when they're at their best, and he did not disagree in terms of, you know, when they're a really connected team in terms of, and we've seen it a lot in the first three games, hemming other teams in their zone, you know, everybody reading off one another really well. And when the Flames are spending a lot of quality offensive zone time, and that's not on the rush, that's with their forecheck and offensive zone time and possessing it well and making the other teams, you know, defense and their checking game, when it's difficult for them, I find those are the nights that the Flames are at their best. But, you know, outside of about a 7 or 8 minute stretch in total, I don't know about you, Logan, but the Flames did not play to their identity last night and what makes them, and they are a really good team. And take nothing away from Buffalo, but They never got to their identity or their game often enough and for any length of time.
No, full agreement from me on that. It was an uncharacteristic night for the group, and they'll look to rebound tomorrow against the Hurricanes. We did see one lineup change last night, Lou. We wondered if this was coming after he wasn't at practice, but Noah Hanifin did not play last night. Connor Mackey came in. Switched up the D pairings a bit. I mean, Nikita Zadorov and Rasmus Anderson were a pair. Connor Mackey paired up with Michael Stone. I guess just your assessment, I think people can tell, and if you watched the game, it wasn't hard to tell. I guess just your assessment how the group did without Noah in there, and I guess the guy that came in directly for him, Connor Mackey, your thoughts on his performance?
Well, you know, I felt for him, and he was... his performance was broken down by the head coach of the team, and the coach of the team put it this way, and I'm paraphrasing, but not completely paraphrasing, and that is, you know, when you're somebody coming into the lineup and you get an opportunity, you need to take advantage of that opportunity. So, you know, Connor played 10 minutes, which was nowhere near as much as any of the other five guys. The game got to a point where, you know, they got short not only on defense, but also up front. I don't know if it was a night for me, Logan, because I didn't think any of the groups, you know, some players obviously were better than others, but this wasn't a situation necessarily. Did they miss Noah? Of course they did. You know, when he's in their lineup and playing well, they have a pretty fantastic, you know, top four, and the all six have been pretty good. So it, definitely disrupted things, but it wasn't a night where you could go, you know, it was the pairings that were the reason that turned pucks over or they didn't check well as a group. You know, there are a lot of different players and the team as a group that I would point to more than the loss of Noah, but it was great to see him back at practice. I think he's been fighting something that has really kind of walloped him a little bit this week, and that can happen. And even chatted yesterday about whether he would play or wouldn't, and you know, I made reference of I knew he wasn't feeling well going into the game against Vegas, and then if you're not feeling that great and you're run down to begin with and you don't give your body enough time to, you know, be all right and play a, you know, an NHL hockey game and play more than 20 minutes on defense, probably not enough time to recover. So, yeah, I think it's been a tough week for him health-wise, but it was great that he was back today because I was somewhat worried that it might have been, you know, more than maybe illness, and maybe it is a little something, but that was a good sign today.
Yeah, we're chatting with Peter Labardius, our Flames insider here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, following a Flames loss to the Buffalo Sabres last night. They're back in action Saturday night. Well, Hockey Night in Canada action as they welcome in Rod Brind'Amour and the Carolina Hurricanes. A lot of chat, obviously, Lou, about Jacob Markstrom and his performance early on in the season. He did not come out for the second period last night. Daryl Sutter goes to Dan Vladar, looking to spark his team. Doesn't really get it. First opportunity that Dan faces is a high danger one that ends up in the back of the net from Alex Tuch just 46 seconds into period number two. I guess just your feel on the Markstrom situation, how you felt he's played so far this season. I think the bar is set so high for Jacob that anytime we see anything that's not Vezina caliber goaltending, there's questions, but I'm not really in the worried category when it comes to a guy that puts in as much work as Jacob Markstrom. Where are you on that?
Well, I mean, I refuse to worry. He's not at his best. He'd be the first to tell you that right now. It's early in the year. I think some of that concern is compounded by how the season ended and his performance in the playoff series, not against Dallas, where I thought he was really, really good, but more so in the five-game loss at the hands of the Oilers. But before last night, while he'd given up a tough one to start his previous two, you know, times in net, I thought he fought back really, really well and really shut the door for his team, which you ask of an excellent goalie when games can turn or you need big saves at key moments. Last night, did he fight it? Yes. Would you point necessarily to any of the Buffalo goals before he left the game that were all on him? Not necessarily. There's two kind of goalie games for me, and one is a goalie game where you go, he let in bad ones, and there's another goalie type game like last night where you could have used one or two more saves. And it was number two for me, and he wasn't necessarily at the top, but he didn't get a lot of help either. It's not a big concern. I understand why it's a topic. It's always going to be a topic in the Canadian market where we evaluate every game like in many ways it's a playoff game or it's the greatest thing ever when things go well and it's the worst thing that ever happens when you don't win. But whether it was Jacob's performance or the team's performance, you don't like to lose. I think it's a good thing for this group. You know, they won three in a row. They ran the gauntlet against three great opponents, riding high. A lot of people in hockey talking about the Calgary Flames, you know, for the 2 days leading up, Logan, like, oh my goodness, this might be the best team in the league right now. And then, whammo, you're not at your best. You play a young, fast, big, talented team that certainly had its A game, especially when they had the puck, and you took one right in the chin. Or as I like to say, took one right in the teeth. Well, that's fine. They weren't going 82-0, and it wasn't going to be perfect. And you get back to work, and they'll be ready tomorrow night for another very, very stiff test. So, yep, they got caught a little bit, weren't exactly where they needed to be, more mentally, I think, than anything, and they paid a price.
Before we move on and talk about some of the aspects of the Carolina Hurricanes tomorrow, just, you know, wanted to take a second, too, and, you know, Pat says this a lot, and I know you do, too. The other team gets paid to play as well. Just the work that Don Granato's done there, Kevin Adams, that guy I know you brought up on the Flames Talk post-game show last night. That Buffalo team is really starting to show some of their strengths there. I thought Rasmus Dahlin looked as good as I've ever seen him in person, Lou. It's a good young team there in Buffalo, and as much as we'll talk about the Flames and what they didn't do well last night, a lot of credit goes to that group in white and blue last night.
Well, they were excellent. They were organized. They, as I said right off the top, their puck movement last night was outstanding. For a while, I thought I was watching, you know, a team that looked like it was poised to be a Stanley Cup contender. They moved it beautifully. Their spacing was great. Lots of times where 4 and 5 guys touched the puck, you know, from their own end into Calgary's zone. They were an excellent, excellent team, especially with the puck. And they had it the majority of the time. I love what they're building. Dahlin is off to a historic start. Hard to believe that he's the only defenseman to score in 4 straight games to begin the season. He accomplished that last night. Alex Tuch was superb. Tage Thompson, you thought it was going in every time it left his stick. Cousins, Krebs, Olofsson, go on down the line. They were an excellent team last night, and I was looking more forward to watching the Buffalo Sabres than maybe any other time while I've been in Calgary covering the Flames, and they didn't disappoint me, I can tell you that.
No, they certainly didn't. It was a pretty complete performance last night from the Buffalo Sabres, and successful road trip to Alberta for them as they pick up wins against the Oilers and the Flames. Looking forward to the next opponent as well on Saturday night, Lou. Let's talk a bit about the Carolina Hurricanes. They fall last night for the first time this season to the Edmonton Oilers. An interesting group that comes in here with Rod Brind'Amour. They've made some interesting moves this offseason. The main piece, for those of you who might have forgotten, was bringing in Brent Burns, the longtime San Jose Sharks defenseman, now patrols the blue line in Carolina for the next couple of seasons. They did bring in Max Pacioretty as well from Vegas, but he's on long-term injured reserve, unfortunately with an injury, so we will not see him tonight. Give me your impressions of this group, Lou. They feel like they've been in the mix in the Eastern Conference for a couple of years now, but just haven't broken through to, you know, the heights that Rod Brind'Amour's hoped for his group.
Well, the one thing that is consistent about Carolina under Rod Brind'Amour is their consistency. They play fast. They have terrific players in Jacob Slavin. I think he's one of the best defensemen in hockey. He's not going to put up Cale Makar-like numbers, but you ask any coach in this league about what a great player he is, and Pesci, and I really like the addition of Brent Burns. I know he's 37 years old, but his play is infectious. It gives them another dynamic. You think about their evolution with, you know, Dougie Hamilton gone and no more Tony DeAngelo. So he's a guy that, you know, still at his age and 1,200 plus games, still is going to really, really help this young team, I believe. Svechnikov is out to an unbelievable beginning, the former second overall pick. He's got 5 goals in his last 2. He's 22 years old. The other guy that I'm really looking forward to seeing in person again is Martin Natchez, who I thought had a chance. I remember vividly watching him at the 2018 World Junior in Buffalo in a couple of games and loved his skill level, and he's a guy that you've been waiting for. And you know, listen, Sebastian Aho is one of my favorite players to watch in the league, period, end of story. Probably in my top 10 or certainly top 15 of guys that I just love watching play hockey. So this is an excellent team. They work their tails off. They play fast. There's not very many nights where I ever watch them, whether it's in person or on TV, where, you know, you don't feel like they don't have a chance to win. They won 50-plus again last year. And in the playoffs, I don't know about you, Logan, but for me, the one thing that people point to is, as great as Aho is, and, you know, they've got good players in Teravainen, and they haven't necessarily had a game breaker. Well, maybe Svechnikov is on his way to being that guy. And if Natchez continues to progress, he has a chance. So, you know, that's a big part of it. You know, young guys come in, and here's a perfect example. If you were to evaluate Rasmus Dahlin in his first couple of years and you just stopped, I bet a lot of people were thinking, boy, this is not a very good first overall pick. Well, how'd you feel about watching him last night? I know how you felt, because I know anybody who knows the game who's watched him and watched him at that in that rink last night. This guy's he's becoming a true number one, and they're not easy to find. But it takes time. And we have such great expectations of all high picks and all talented young players because of who has set the bar. And the people who have set the bar are people like, you know, back in the day, Crosby, or in more recent times, McDavid and Dreisaitl and, you know, Austin Matthews. But, Logan, we have to remember the generational players, Makar, yes, we've seen a lot of them. And, yes, players are coming out sooner and making an impact earlier, but those guys might be on their way to Hall of Fame careers. Just because you're a high pick or a first rounder doesn't mean you're going to be a generational guy. So it takes time. And, you know, Carolina, for me, those are two guys in particular I'm, you know, excited to see again. Because if they can truly get over and turn into elite players, then now they've got an even better chance than they've had in this stretch where last 3 or 4 years under a fabulous coach in Rod Brind'Amour, now they have a chance. The only thing about them is I'm not sure from 1 through 6 I'm in love with their whole defense. I certainly like, you know, 3 and 4, it's after that, I think there's still some patchwork, and they've added DeHaan, who, you know, is a pretty good steady Eddie guy, certainly now, and he's 30 years old. So it's a good group. It's one of the best teams in the league that the Flames are going to play tomorrow.
Just before I let you go, it's hard to believe. I remember when he was drafted, but this is year 5 for Andrei Svechnikov, Lou, and 40 playoff games already under his belt for the 22-year-old. Incredible. He's already up to 8 points in 4 games this season. Had the hat trick last night in Edmonton. I really do think, I've thought for a long time, that he's going to be that game breaker that they truly need. It's just, to me, I have to sit and remember, he's 22. Yes, yeah. It's year five, but he's 22. And how many 22-year-olds are breaking playoff games and, you know, breaking barriers like that? It takes time to do that. And he's getting that time. He's putting that work in. I really think the world of number 37 in red. I think he's going to be tremendous for this team to come. I can't believe it's year five for him already.
Yeah, it goes by quickly, and it's not easy for all kinds of reasons to play in the best league in the world and to start at 18 and 19. I mean, there's a lot of things happening in young people's lives and the attention and the money and all of it, but you know, my first memories of Andrei Svechnikov was when I believe he was, certainly if he wasn't a double underage, he was an underage at the World Under 17 Challenge when he was 15. And he blew me away in that event with his talent level, playing for his home country of Russia. And it was from there on that, you know, I'm like, oh my goodness, this guy, I don't know how it's going to translate for sure, but he looks like a special talent to me. And, you know, ended up in Barrie and had a great one season there. Shoots it a ton. He's huge. He can skate. He can make plays. He is a very, very skilled young player who this might be the year that, you know, it truly translates into something big. And it's not like he's, you know, we're not talking about a guy who's got 5 and 6 goals in his first 4 years either.
No, it's going to be interesting to see his progression. We'll get a chance to see him in person tomorrow night at the Scotiabank Sound Dome. An 8 p.m. puck drop. Derek and Lou on the call right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Thanks as always for the time, Lou. We'll see you at the Dome tomorrow, pal.
All right, thanks. Have a good weekend, everybody.
There you go. Pete Labardius, our Flames insider here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, joins us every single day to kick off the program here on Sportsnet today. And, yes, you'll hear him as part of the Flames Talk pregame show with Pat Steinberg tomorrow at 7 p.m., and he'll be on the call with Derek at 8 p.m. right here on Sportsnet 960 Flames and the Carolina Hurricanes. Lou is proudly brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style, your home renovation should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. The Gemini Group now offering Air Miles Reward Miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca. We'll take a break, come back on the other side, get you a little Saturday night football preview. The Stampeders still with a little bit of hope that they might host the West semifinal against the BC Lions. If they want to do that, they'll need a win against the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Matt Rose has your live edition of the Stamps Report next here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
You're listening to Sportsnet Today with Logan Gordon on the home of the Flames, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
CFL action kicks off tonight. Four games to go. Two tonight. Ottawa, Hamilton at 5. BC, Edmonton, 7:45. And a doubleheader Saturday. Toronto, Montreal, and your Calgary Stampeders in Saskatchewan to take on the Rough Riders. Just about through the season, week 20. Gets going in a couple hours' time. And for the first time this season, the Stampeders will meet against the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, a home and home to finish off the season. It doesn't happen very often, but it's the first meeting of the year between these two rivals. And to help us get set for Saturday's matchup, we go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Welcome in our Stampeders insider and the co-host of The Big Show in the Morning with Russick and Rose. It is our pal, Matty Rose. Matty, good afternoon, pal. How are you?
Yo, I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good, pal. Interesting tonight. Stampeders getting set to take on the Riders at Mosaic Stadium. And You've been covering the Stamps for a while now here and watching for a long time. I can't ever remember a year where the first meeting between the Stamps and the Riders came this late in the season.
Yeah, this is it's a little bit strange to say the least. And, you know, when I saw it on the schedule, I was, you know, I had the same thought. It's a little late for the first meeting. Only two meetings, also a bit peculiar. But hopefully by the time we get there, it'll mean something. You know, the Riders are hosting the Grey Cup. We knew the Bombers were going to be good. Questions surrounded the Elks and the Lions going into the season, and Nathan Rourke made everyone forget about that. It's tough because I really do wish that there was more on the line as far as these two teams battling for playoff position in the West. But that's not how it worked out. That's the way the schedule was this year. That's the only way you can play it. So they'll move forward. They'll try and beat Mason Fine this weekend rather than Cody Fajardo and try and get a couple of key wins. They got to sweep this home and home if they have any chance whatsoever of moving into second place in the Western Division. Granted, if Edmonton loses to BC tonight, it's a bit of a moot point. But nevertheless, still a pretty big game for both clubs.
Yeah, that's where I wanted to go with you next. It's sort of an interesting situation for the Stampeders because you're right. If BC doesn't find a way to win tonight in Edmonton, all of a sudden the game has much more importance for the Calgary Stampeders. But I guess from the other side of that, it's kind of a two-sided, a double-edged sword for Dave Dickinson in the sense that, okay, you want to make sure that your team is ready to go and ready to perform in a big game against Saskatchewan. But if they're watching TV tonight in the hotel in Regina and see that BC wins, kind of hard to maintain that same level of intensity for a game that doesn't mean anything with their focus going to BC in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think that I could see it going that way. But the other thing for me is that the Stampeders have known for basically the better part of a month that they're going to play the Lions in the postseason. The biggest question was, where are they going to end up playing the Lions in the postseason? So since these two clubs have locked it up, I think that they've both really been focused on keying in on their details, making sure that they're just being the best that they can be and getting ready for the postseason. Like, if this was, you know, a few weeks back, you're talking like week 14, 15, and the Riders are out of it at that point, perhaps, yes. But I just think that this is a team that, you know, we've heard Dave Dickinson harp quite a bit in practice that it's all about the details right now. And I really do think that the team is buying into that because, like, I talked to Jameer Thurman coming out of that game against the Argos, and he was like, yeah, we allowed 2 points, but it was 2 points too many. And frankly, those weren't even 2 points that we allowed. They were on Rouges. So it's fair by Jameer Thurman there, but they're always striving to be better. And you don't want to take the Riders, you know, easily here. They're 6-10. They're not having a great season. Mason Fine's coming in at a quarterback. It's a new little wrinkle. The Riders have lost 5 straight games at home, so that's a problem for them too. But I think that anytime it's the Stamps, if the Riders, people get up for these games, and they'll be dialed in and ready to go, regardless of what the result is on Friday. Like, I think a lot of the Stampeders probably have even come around to the idea that going to BC for that West Division semifinal isn't the worst thing in the world. You get to play indoors. The Lions have been up and down. You don't know if Nathan Rourke is going to play. Mm. So I think that they've really started to more focus on just themselves, how they're playing. They don't really care. Well, no, that's not fair to say. It would always be great to host a playoff game. You always want to play in front of your fans. But if you do go to BC, this isn't like you have to go to Edmonton in November, right? Like this,
yeah.
You get to play indoors and you're on the coast. So
yeah.
In that sense, there's a little bit of I think they'll be ready.
Okay. Yeah, and honestly, to your point there, it's not the worst thing ever. It's not crossover travel. You're not going out to the East Coast. It's a pretty short trip to Vancouver, and you're right.
You beat
indoors.
The Lions last time you saw them.
Yeah. Yeah. No, understood. Makes a lot of sense there from a Stamps perspective. Interesting, we got the depth charts and rosters ahead of tomorrow night's game, and I think this might have been the shortest in-and-out chart I've seen from the Stampeders this season. Just 3 names in and 3 names out. And with all due respect to the names on that list, we're not talking about, you know, any superstars in or out for the Stampeders this time. Interesting, though, Peyton Logan's not going to be there. That's a bit of a loss. Luther Hakunavanu also out for this one. Talk to me about the roster changes for Dave Dickinson's crew.
Yeah, Peyton Logan comes out. He's the running back. That means that we're going to see Dedrick Mills back up Kadeem Carey, which I'm excited to see. Dedrick Mills is a fun guy to watch. He puts his head down. He runs hard. He runs guys over as well. So that'll be good. But Kadeem Carey is back in the lineup. Really did feel like Peyton Logan, along with several other Stampeders, Malik Henry, Luther Okunavamu, who comes off the roster, and Titus Wall, they were all given questionable tags in the latest injury report and really felt like if this was a game that you needed to have, they probably maybe could have pushed it to be available. But given what we just talked about, you can give these guys an extra week and let them focus more on the final regular season game. Be ready for that and then get yourself ready for the postseason. So we'd see Dedrick Mills back. We see Peyton Logan come out. Josiah Shakel, the linebacker, gets onto the roster as well. He was a draft pick in 2022. He's dealt with injury, but he's played good when he hasn't been hurt. He's kind of similar to Jalen Philpott, a high draft pick. Jalen Philpott, the receiver, they've played well when they've been healthy, but being a first-year player in the CFL straight out of the draft, there's a little bit of growing physically that there is to do to make sure that you're available for a full 21-game season. So Josiah Shakel comes in. He's probably going to be a special teamer. That helps with the loss of Charlie Power, who, listen, he's a fullback. It's not the sexiest position, especially when Will Longley's the one who's kind of leading the charge with the offense. But Charlie Power is a big part of the special teams group, whether it's in coverage, whether it's blocking, whether it's whatever. He's a big part there. And then with Okunavamu, he's easily the biggest target that the Stampeders have available since Kamar Jordan went down. So that's a little bit of a loss. Sean Bain isn't the biggest guy. Reggie Bagleton is strong, but I wouldn't say that his height is his key factor. And same with Philpott, Sindani, and Odom Stukes. A little bit of height there with Sindani and Odom Stukes, but nothing compared to the really rangy Luther Okunavamu. We also see TJ Rayum come off the six-game injured list, which gives them a little bit more of options on that defensive line as they're trying to rotate in. Rayum being a Canadian guy, he can offset Derek Wigan and give them a couple other options. So previously, if Wigan was coming off the lineup, that meant that Adeyemi Berglund had to be on the field as you swap Canadians. Now that's not going to be an issue. If they want to go with the Rimilani and Lemon as their ends and keep Mike Rose, they can bring Rayum in to give Wigan a little bit of a rest on the interior. So those are your three changes. Nothing too crazy going on there. All the guys who came off are just on the one-game injured list. So we'll look towards this game and see who can go out and make a big impression. But like you mentioned, not a whole ton of changes for the Stampeders for this one. All pretty minor and all pretty good to see. I also wonder if we do get a look at Kamar Jordan for the regular season finale, as he was doing a little bit more practice this week.
Yeah, we're right on the same page again here, Matt, because that's what I was going to go to next with you with these next two games, you know, potentially not having as much meaning as you'd hope for the Calgary Stampeders. That kind of puts you in a spot where, hey, we might want to take an opportunity to see how guys are in terms of health and preparation for maybe being available for that playoff game. You mentioned Kamar Jordan. That would obviously be a big add to the offense and for Jake Mayer to have another weapon out there. But what's the sense of any other injured players? Are we on the precipice of seeing anybody these next couple weeks? What have you heard on that front when it comes to the health of the Stampeders?
Well, Trey Roberson continues to work his absolute hardest to try and make it back this season. Dave Dickinson gave a little bit of an update on that earlier on in the week. That's a work in progress. Definitely don't expect him back, but if he could get back, that would be a great boost for the Stampeders secondary, especially because they don't really have anybody who's the same size that Trey Roberson was or is in that secondary. They're all relatively shorter guys, which isn't a bad thing. Like Jonathan Moxie, their shutdown boundary corner, he's only listed at 5'10". So if you end up going up against a 6'4", 6'5" receiver for Winnipeg or BC in the postseason, that's a tough matchup for Jonathan Moxie. I think he's one of the better boundary corners in the league, but anytime you're giving up 6-7 inches to a guy in coverage, then you're in a little bit of trouble. So Trey Roberson's an intriguing one, but that's a little bit of a hope and a prayer, I would say. Kamar Jordan, like I mentioned, was doing a little bit more work this week. We actually saw him running routes, which is a lot to do as he gets closer to being pulled off the six-game injured list. Wasn't on the injury report all week. That'll probably come next week as they try to draw him in a little bit, but I do wonder if he'll be available for that game. It'd be ideal that he can be ready for that game, obviously, but we'll continue to wait and see on that. Another guy that I'm intrigued by is Natrell Jamerson. played well in just a handful of games. He's a defensive back early on in the season when they were dealing with a ton of injuries. He was in uniform this week. I don't know how close he's going to be. I don't know if he's going to jump anybody that is currently on the practice roster or currently healthy, but another guy on the six-game injured list that I'd look at and say might be a little bit close. Titus Wall, another guy that I had mentioned earlier, the outstanding Sam linebacker. He's a player that I think as soon as he's healthy, you try and get him on the lineup.
Last one for you before I let you go here, Matt. The opposition, the Rough Riders, obviously a disappointing season for them. They're not out of it yet, but it feels like it's close. They could find themselves on the outside looking in when it comes to the playoffs when they're hosting the Grey Cup. That's never a good thing. Interesting there this week. Obviously, Mason Fine, you said, is going to get the start for them there. But Cody Fajardo talking to the media sure sounded like a guy that was starting to put the Rough Riders' tenure in his rearview mirror. Just how do you look at this season for Saskatchewan? I know you've watched a lot of football. I don't know how much Riders football you've watched because it's been some bad football this year. But just your thoughts on that team and how disappointing this year has been for them as a whole.
Yeah, listen, I think that it's tough for Cody Fajardo. He ends up wearing the kind of goat mask on this one. And granted, I don't love the comments from Cody. Like, you've got a guy who has a way more impressive CFL career, bar none, in Bo Levi Mitchell, and we've never heard anything of the like come out of Bo for the entire course of the season. So I didn't love the comments from Cody Fajardo. I thought he was in a pretty tough spot. This is an offensive line that was just, it had him running for his life the entire season. It's not even close when you look at it. They've allowed 66 sacks. The next closest team is Edmonton, who's allowed 52. 14 less. They're averaging like over four a game against. It is an egregious rate. He's been running for his life all season long. And as a result, the offense hasn't been able to do anything. And the defense for them has been pretty solid. Darnell Sankey's been tearing it up. They've got a couple of really good edge rushers and Robertson and A.C. Leonard. I like their secondary. And when you look at the numbers, they're kind of a middling pack when the defense stats go up there. But the problem is that the offense is constantly going on short drives. The defense is out there for way too long, having to face too many offensive plays. And that's what it comes down to for me. The offense wasn't good enough. This is the team that dealt with bad, bad, bad discipline issues early on in the season. We all remember when Duke Williams got in trouble for getting involved in a sideline kind of altercation when he wasn't even dressed for a game. Like, this just felt like a year where everything that could go wrong for the Riders kind of did, except for some things on the defense. And now the question is, what's it going to look like moving forward? Is Mason Fine the guy? Is it someone else in the CFL who's going to be looking for a job after this year? Who knows? But that'll continue to be something that we watch for. I'm intrigued to see how they look in these last two games. Like I mentioned, they've lost five straight games at home, and that's peculiar for Saskatchewan, and I'm sure some of the Riders fans are very unhappy with. So we'll continue to wait. It's weird that it's the last two matches, but they're here, they're now, and I wonder if these are the last couple games we do see if Cody Fajardo was the Rider.
Looking forward to Saturday, Matt. Appreciate the time, as always, pal. We'll chat with you again next week, eh?
You got it. Take care.
There you go. Matty Rose, our Stampeders insider and co-host of the Big Show in the Morning with Russick and Rose every single day here on Sportsnet 960, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., or wherever you get your podcasts, Google, Amazon, Apple, Spotify, et cetera, et cetera. We've got a couple minutes left in the show here, and wanted to take a quick second before we go today to say goodbye to a teammate here at Sportsnet 960. You might not know him by name. He's not always on air here, but one of our producers here at Sportsnet 960 is in his final hours here with the company, and that is our pal Aaron Howell. Started out in promo a couple of years ago, has worked his way up here at Sportsnet, and is moving on to some bigger and better things. Wanted to take a quick second to thank Aaron for literally everything that he's done here. He's been a superb teammate. He's been an awesome friend. I've really, really enjoyed working with him the last couple of months as we got more time together on shows. And it's a super big loss for us here at Sportsnet. I couldn't be happier that he's got a great opportunity in front of him. I will miss him here, as I know a lot of people will. If you've called into the post-game show with Pat for a couple of years. You probably heard Aaron's voice on the other side there. It's just been tremendous getting to know him. Aaron, I wish you the absolute best, pal. I've been giving you a hard time about leaving me the last couple of weeks for personal reasons, but I really am happy for you. Good luck with everything, pal, and really thanks for everything you did here.
Thanks, Logan. I really appreciate those kind words, man. You know what? Likewise, it's been a blast working here. It's been a blast working with everyone and you. Yeah, I'm gonna miss it, but I am really excited for the future ahead.
Yeah, we'll miss you, pal. Keep in touch, as always. If you missed it there, our producer Aaron Howell signing off for the last time. This is his last day with us. He did his last Flames game with Pat the other day. And I know that myself, Steinberg, JT, everybody here at Sportsnet 960 is going to miss him. So wanted to make sure I got that in before we said goodbye for the day. That'll do it for Sportsnet today here on Sportsnet 960. That was Matt Rose, who joined us down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Peter Labardius, as always, thank you to both of them. Thank you to you for listening. Really appreciate it, as always. We'll be back tomorrow night with some Flames coverage here on Sportsnet 960. But coming up today, PDO Cast with Dmitry Filipovich is next. Pat has Flames Talk at 4, and then I'll have your Calgary Hitmen pregame show at 6. They take on the Saskatoon Blades at 7 o'clock tonight from the Scotiabank Saddledome. Keep it locked here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.